This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
Millions of Americans are losing their medical assistance or Medicaid coverage. If this affects you, Independence Blue Cross can help. You may be eligible to enroll in a health plan for as little as $0 a month. With Independence Blue Cross, you get the largest provider network in the area, including most Keystone First doctors and hospitals. We also offer free 24/7 telemedicine, coverage for hospital stays and prescriptions. See if you qualify for $0 health insurance and enroll today. Call Independence Blue Cross at 1-844-464-2583 or visit ibx.com/stay covered.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor. On call every Saturday afternoon at 5. This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. According to a survey from 2017, about 40% of people aged 18 through 69 in the U.S. have at least one tattoo. And of those people, one in four have several. Though most of the time the process leads to a successful outcome, you need to consider the risks of infection, allergic reactions, or even scars. Today, we'll discuss the precautions you should take before you commit to having body art applied. Joining us today is Dr. Bruce Broad, a clinical professor of dermatology and an associate dean at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, and the director of Contact Dermatitis Clinic at Penn Medicine. Welcome, Bruce. So glad to have you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to be here. Hopefully, we can provide some very important information for the folks out there so that those who choose to get tattoos are really fully aware of the risks and do it in a manner that's just as safe as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a wonderful conversation the other day when we decided what topics to cover. And you said, even with the best practices, there are still risks because you just can't control everything. We're going to talk about the ways that infection kind of seep into the process. So some of the skin side effects, allergic reactions to some of the dyes, or a person can develop a granuloma or pleural granulomata, which is a type of a scar. Let's talk about those first and then maybe talk about infection.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And tattoos, you're right, they're more popular than ever. I mean, 30% of Americans have tattoos, 40% between 18 and 34. So it's really common. I think there's like 25,000 tattoo parlors in the U.S. and it's big money, but there are some risks. I mean, it's not the practice of medicine, but it's sort of in a funny zone because it is invasive. I mean, it involves, breaching the skin, breaking the skin barrier. There's contact with blood. So it's sort of this funny, blurry area that's not, a medical procedure performed by, a licensed physician or other healthcare provider, but it's sort of medical in a way. And so, like, any medical procedure, there's risks, and those risks can be mitigated. So my area of expertise, specialty, is allergic contact dermatitis. So over the years, patients will come to me, they'll be referred to me, who have allergic reactions to tattoos. Who would have thought? And the problem, though, is, like, for instance, if somebody's allergic to poison ivy, that's a pain in the neck, but, they don't touch it. The reaction goes away. I mean, the poison ivy is off the skin, but a tattoo, the ink is in the skin. I mean, and it's there. That's the intention, right, is to permanently put the ink in the skin. So out of luck, if somebody develops an allergic reaction to one of the tattoo inks because they're kind of stuck with it. And so one type of reaction is something we call a granulomatous reaction. And a granulomatous reaction occurs, they tend to occur when there's a foreign body introduced into the skin. So let's say somebody gets a splinter in their skin, that can cause a granulomatous reaction, or a piece of sand or something under the skin. It's sort of the way our body organizes the immune system to try to surround something that the body's immune system doesn't think belongs there. And while most patients who get tattoos have the tattoo ink, there's various types of ink placed under the skin, most people don't get that type of reaction. Some, you know, everybody's different, and some immune systems will think, hey, this doesn't belong here. And so it organizes this reaction, and it's very color specific. So somebody could have a multicolored tattoo, but if they're one of these folks who are going to react in this very specific way and form a granuloma, it'll happen in that specific color. Somebody could have a red, a yellow, a green, a blue, a black tattoo, and typically the patient will be referred and you'll see the reaction, see it just in one single color. And it's, you know, they're kind of tough because they're unsightly, they can itch, they're raised in nature, so that's, you know, not what somebody wants their tattoo to look like. And there's other allergic reactions too. People can get sort of almost like an eczema, dry skin reaction to certain tattoo inks. Some people can get something that sounds awful. It's a benign condition called a pseudo lymphoma. It's like a different sort of organized type of reaction to certain tattoo inks, but treatment's really difficult because the ink is there, and you know, we do our best to calm down the reaction. We use it, we can inject cortisones in there, we can use topical cortisones and other agents, but oftentimes it's we persist, and it's a matter of, you know, trying to get the ink out. Mm-hmm. But that's a whole other conundrum.
Well, I mentioned earlier when I introduced you to our listeners that you're a dean at Penn Medical School, Perelman Medical School, and you're a dean of CME, Continuing Medical Education. And we get, you know, I'm sharing this with the listeners, we get great emails from different companies that have little education stories. And about, I don't know, over the summer, I got an email saying, guess what's wrong with this person? Guess the skin lesion. And it was a tattoo, and only the red lines in the tattoo were raised. And I guessed allergic reaction, and it left such a visual. I said, I have to talk about tattoos on the show. People have to know, because as you mentioned, it's not regulated. It's not like medicine. Even the FDA, really doesn't regulate the inks. And there are so many different particles in the ink that can cause allergic reactions. So is one dye more likely to cause an allergic response or a granuloma than others? Or is it depends on the person and their immune system, I guess?
No, it's a really complex question, because most of the tattoo inks are really a combination of several different types of dye. And so sort of in my normal practice, you know, directing the contact dermatitis at clinic at Penn, patients are referred to me who might be having reactions to shampoos, the dye they use in their hair. And usually with a non-invasive test called patch testing, I can apply all these substances to their skin and then see what they react to and aha, come up with the answer and tell them, hey, you know, you're allergic to something in your hair dye, you know, use dyes that don't have it, and, you know, patients are good to go. And it's really the reason why a lot of these patients are referred to me, because the referring doctor thinks, well, you're an allergy type of dermatologist. You can just do your patch testing to the dye and figure out, you know, what's in the dye. But there's something, you know, there's something distinctly different about tattoo reactions and the way the body reacts. And we have found that the testing we do to determine allergy from like shampoo and fragrance and products, it doesn't work for tattoo inks. We really can't elicit that reaction when we put the ink on the skin. And we think the reason is something happens when the ink is placed under the skin, and it either changes the dye in some people to make it reactive, or somehow bypasses that part of the immune system. So it's really hard to pinpoint.
It's a puzzlement.
What dye it is. Dyes are higher risk than some other dyes, but any of them could potentially do it.
Yeah. Well, I think too, Bruce, when we talk about, say, food allergies or even medication allergies, that we know as practitioners that a person can react the first time they take it or 5 years into it. So even with tattoos, an allergic reaction can occur even years later. Let's talk about infection, because I guess in the grand scheme, what would you say, maybe 5 or 6%? It's relatively low, but I was reading that there's been a 77% increase rate of infection since 2000. Is that, relatively speaking, because many more people are having tattoos, or do you think it's because there's so many more tattoo parlors and they're not regulated?
I think the difficult aspect of that is that a lot of these folks aren't connected to the medical system.
Right.
So we really don't know what the real rate of reactivity is. We've seen this explosion in the popularity of tattoos, although they go back to kind of the Middle Ages. They occur, and there's really a broad spectrum of the type of infections that occur, from things that are, nobody wants an infection when they get a tattoo. They're trying to get a tattoo. Well, there's many, many reasons that would motivate somebody to get
sure.
a tattoo. But nobody wants an infection. There's a broad range from things that are really serious and things that are not as serious, but still a big pain in the neck. And I can talk about that spectrum.
Yeah. Well, I think you make a very good point as well. When somebody does get infection, they're more likely, I'm guessing, to go back to the tattoo artist than go to a doctor, because they think there must be some remedy that goes with the person who provides the service. So with that, there's no local or national database or registry for us to get, good information to study. So we're saying that infections also, like allergic reactions, can be acute and happen within, I guess, several days or develop over time. What would a person look for? Bumps, rash, redness?
Different. We can break it down into a couple categories: bacteria, viruses, and then there's this other kind of unique bacterial category. So like a common infection somebody might get from a tattoo, and this would occur early on, and this can happen because the skin wasn't prepped enough, or the inks, and we can talk a little bit about that. The inks were contaminated either in the factory or in the shop, or the equipment used, was contaminated. But the real most common type of infection is like staph, right? Most people have heard of staph or strep infections, and that will show up as redness, pain in the skin. The area may feel warm. The person could get sick. They may feel a little feverish if the infection gets deeper into the skin. Mm-hmm. That's called a cellulitis. So that's common. The skin might be a little crusty, and that on the surface, that happens generally early on. It might happen with, evolve over a week, but patients can get viral infections as well. Warts, things like warts. Mm-hmm. I've seen patients with warts, and they're exactly right in line with the design of the tattoo ink. Why does it happen? Maybe the person had the virus dormant on their skin, the tattoo knocked it into the skin, or the tattoo artist might have had it contaminated on their skin or surface, molluscum, or kind of a nuisance-y kind of bumpy virus that children get sometimes. But tattoos, breaking the skin, that breaking the skin can induce that as well.
Yeah, and as you said the other day, when you aggress the skin and you're puncturing the skin, Staph and strep live on our skin, so if you drag it in, no surprise. That's what we're going to talk about, some of the other infections as we go on. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, more about risks of tattoos.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we believe in giving you the tools you need to pursue your healthiest life. From premiums as low as $0 per month to health discounts and cash rewards, it pays to have coverage with Independence. With the strongest network of doctors and hospitals in the region and free 24/7 virtual doctor visits, you can feel confident that quality care is always within reach. Learn more about your coverage options at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're here with Dr. Bruce Broad from Penn Dermatology. Bruce, we've talked about the possible side effects when we are aggressive with entering the skin with a needle multiple times to inject ink, and it we don't understand the mystery of how it works and how it might react in different people. And we're talking about infection, but I also found it interesting that you said that the whole process is a form of trauma to the skin. And if you have psoriasis, it can make that worse. Vitiligo, you would think almost the opposite. Vitiligo, you lose pigmentation. And obviously, too, if you have sun-damaged skin, the trauma might enhance skin cancer manifestation, yes?
Yes, no. So there's, you know, so as a dermatologist, I spend my day treating and trying to help patients with skin diseases that are chronic, things like psoriasis, which results in kind of red, scaly patches on the skin, or very disturbing loss of pigment of the skin called vitiligo. And there's a number of other conditions as well with kind of funny names, things like lichen planus and sarcoid. But funny thing, a lot of these immune common skin conditions like psoriasis, like vitiligo, or less common things like sarcoid and lichen planus, they can be aggravated if the skin is injured, if it's traumatized, if it's scratched, scraped, or burned. And so we talked a little bit earlier about how tattooing is, you know, it's a trauma to the skin. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, kind of needles poking into the skin and vibrating around. And so that's a form of trauma. And some patients, very unfortunately, after tattooing, if they're prone to those diseases, the tattoo doesn't cause psoriasis, it doesn't cause vitiligo. But if a person has that or has that underlying condition, they can develop that condition where they've been tattooed in a real traumatic type of tattoo. And some people are prone to getting real thick scars or keloids. That can be an issue too. They could develop that as well. And there have been some reports in the literature, some patients who have had a lot of sun exposure who are prone to skin cancer will actually develop they're called keratoacanthomas. It's kind of a very treatable, it's typically not life-threatening, but very, you know, unsightly, bumpy, scaly, crusty skin cancer that results from the trauma of the tattoos. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody decides they want to consider a tattoo, it might be worth their while. I mean, there are obvious causes of infection. You want to make sure you go and visit the tattoo parlor and watch the artist wash his or her hands before and after they put their gloves on, right? Or not after they put their gloves on, after they take their gloves off. You want to make sure that the needle they're using is sterile and it comes out of a packet, or you can ask them, how do you sterilize them? Do you have an autoclave? Things that make what common sense, but you go in trusting thinking because they're not regulated by the food, drug, or local. And you mentioned that Pennsylvania, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, Pennsylvania has kind of the least oversight of many states. But the other thought was, when I'm a GI doctor, of course, so I always worry about hepatitis and conditions. And back when I first started in practice, if I saw somebody with a tattoo, even if they were coming with acid reflux or belly issues, if I saw a tattoo, I would test for hepatitis B and hepatitis C. a dependent HIV, because back years ago, from what I understand, an artist might put the needle into the ink, use it, and double dip or triple dip, and it's so expensive, they'd use the same bottle on customers 3, 5, 7, and 10. But I do know our liver specialists, our hepatologists, go to tattoo conventions and watch now, and there is much more thoughtful procedure in that. A lot of the artists, I think most of them, are trying to now pour a little ink into a disposable cup and then toss what they don't use. So people are thinking now, plus now we routinely vaccinate our babies for hepatitis B. So hopefully that will help. But people still have to understand that that's a risk. Yes, Hep B, Hep C, HIV?
No question about it. Yeah, I mean, these are, yeah. So you definitely, you know, want to go to a tattoo parlor, a studio that does things sterilely. And I think it's very, you know, reasonable to ask some questions, look at the procedures, go to places that at least are registered by their local jurisdictions, because that means at least there was some level of training that had to take place. Typically, most So there's no federal law regulating tattoos, and really the only state law is you can't tattoo under the age of 18. But local jurisdictions like Philadelphia has some, you know, there's a certification required. So people have to at least show evidence that they've taken some training in how to prevent the spread of bloodborne pathogens and use sterile procedure, similar yeah. to what we would do in medicine as well.
If you were getting stitches or something, yeah.
Yeah, but, mm-hmm. You know, prior to vaccinations and prior to sort of raising the standards to some degree, but it's still a little mm-hmm. bit of a Wild West. Yeah, things like Hep B, Hep C, even HIV. Mm-hmm. There was some outbreak of HIV transmissibility in prisons, you know, way back when, long time ago, you know, even things like syphilis were being spread by unsterile tattoo needles as well.
I saw that up to the year before the year 2000, treponema pallidum, I remember memorizing that in med school, which is associated with syphilis. That was the most common bacterium. Now it's a non-TB mycobacterium. So there's a family of, you know, a genus of bacteria called mycobacterium. And there's one that usually if a person, I guess, inhales it or it's on food or something, the stomach acid kills that bug. But if it's injected into your skin, there's no stomach acid to kill it. But you can still see TB and there are other infections. I was reading this summer too, about an outbreak of Vibrio, which is a bacterium that you know more than I. And Vibrio cholera, we see as GI docs, terrible diarrhea, but Vibrio vulnificus, yes, it's a flesh-eating bacterium. And the story, I think 2017, there was a man, you say, all right, if you're going to get a tattoo, give it 2 weeks to heal. Don't pick your scabs. Make sure your clothing doesn't stick. Avoid the sun. So this fellow went swimming in brackish water, if I have the story correct.
Yes.
And that's where the bug jumped in, because yes. brackish water or salt water has, you know, I guess animal doo-doos in it. But always wait at least 2 weeks before you swim, because this man died, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, there was a flurry of Vibrio, I think, in East Coast water this summer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially, you know, so many people in the population now have compromised immune systems too, right?
Yes.
I mean, thankfully, due to like great medical technology, mm-hmm. you know, people are living longer that have organ transplants, or maybe somebody, you know, being treated for cancer, their immune system's compromised. So they're even more likely, if they get a tattoo, which kind of opens up the skin to infection, and they jump in to water that's contaminated with this horrible bacteria, they're going to even be at higher risk. And what you mentioned earlier about the Mycobacterium TB, there was a flurry of cases. So this is a nasty bacteria that, like, almost resembles tuberculosis, and there were outbreaks of infections in tattoo parlors globally with these weird sounding names like Mycobacterium coloni and Fortuitum. They're really hard to treat. They cause like really horrific, like red bumpy things on the skin, but they were occurring because tattoo artists dilute their inks, right? They want like different shades, and some of the artists were diluting the inks to change the shade with tap water. That sounds safe enough, right? We drink tap water, we don't get sick. And that's great and good, but actually in tap water can live these nasty bacteria. Now, you know, listeners shouldn't be afraid like they're drinking contaminated water, the stomach kills them. But if it gets into ink and it's injected into the skin, these horrible, what's called atypical mycobacterial infections can result. And we've seen them before. And they're really confusing because they can look like the allergic granuloma reactions in the skin we see. And, you know, sometimes we have to do all sorts of workups to figure out what's going on with these patients.
So the message is, if you see anything on your skin, blisters, bumps, if it's itchy or painful or red, see a doctor as soon as you can. Because the other concern we always have, if an infection is, especially if it goes into your bloodstream, it can lead to infection in your heart valves, which is endocarditis, sepsis, which means it's through your whole bloodstream and can say goodbye to your organs and you can die. So, we're not trying to be extreme, but say, be smart. And if you have any of these skin changes, see a doctor as quickly as you can, because as we keep saying, it's not a regulated process. And even the ink, an artist can be really careful and buy bottles of ink marked as sterile, but they can be contaminated. You were mentioning that there was a study or one ink was cultured. It grew out 26 different species of bugs. Not good.
Not at all. And the amazing thing, and so the FDA partnered with this toxicology regulatory group to perform. So they studied various tattoo inks, the permanent makeup tattoo inks and the tattoo inks that are used in artistry tattoos. And these were unopened bottles from the factory that were sealed and unopened. And they sent them to a lab. And they tested the inks and in like they cultured them like you would culture somebody's skin or nose or throat to look for bacteria. And like over a third of the inks actually grew out like multiple different species of bacteria. These are inks sealed in a bottle from the factory. So we know, that there's factories out there that are sending out inks that have bacteria in them that are being injected into the skin. Now you would think, well, gosh, everybody should be getting infected, but healthy people, their body can sort of, ward that off. The problem is if they get a high enough load or somebody's not as healthy, they'll end up with an infection. So you could imagine if they're coming contaminated from the factory in sealed bottles, what happens to the bottles once they've been opened in a tattoo parlor, a couple times, and they're not operating in a sterile like pharmacy. So, these things get contaminated and that gets into the skin.
Well, plus all the different ingredients in the ink there. I was reading on a summary, animal-based ingredients, calligraphy ink, little metal salts. I guess that's what makes it stick better once it's localized. I was reading pigments from printer toner and car paint. So all those things have to be considered, and they vary because, as we said, it's not regulated by the FDA. Stay with us during the break to hear a beautiful story about your real champion for this week. And now for your real champion. I call this segment Step Up with Tony Melendez. Tony Melendez is a singer, songwriter, and guitarist. As a child, he loved to sing and dance as his father played the guitar, especially when he heard La Bamba. So it was no surprise that when Tony got to high school, he joined the school choir and the church choir, and he also learned to play the guitar by age 16, which in his case is extraordinary. Why? Well, originally from Nicaragua, Tony was born with a club foot and no arms. While his mother was pregnant, she was given a drug called thalidomide to treat her morning sickness, which can cause disabilities. Unable to walk because of his club foot, his family drove 5,000 miles from Nicaragua to Los Angeles so he could have corrective surgery through the March of Dimes. With time, he knew he was different, but his entire family treated him as if he were normal. So he learned to do everything with his feet. He could write, play with his toys, even hold a knife in his toes and cut a tomato. Tony says, "They made me feel like, Tony, you're normal." His brother and sister say he has always been self-sufficient. He's even learned to drive because his car has a steering wheel on the floor. When he graduated from high school, it was hard to find a job. He asked himself, what would a guy with no arms do? So one day, he played his guitar on a sidewalk, and passersby were fascinated by his talent. They began tossing tips into his guitar case. He only did it a few times, but he was instilled with the confidence that he could support himself through the music. He also learned something else out there. He felt like his music was starting to do something. People were starting to listen. He sang all kinds of songs, from church and things he heard on the radio. He became more involved in church activities, playing guitar and composing music, then directing and singing in music groups. He was in such demand that on some Sundays, he might sing at 5 masses. Then in 1987, Pope John Paul II, who's now a saint, came to America and made a stop in Los Angeles. Tony was 25 years old, and he was invited by the youth of LA to sing. A young man presented Tony to the Pope as a gift, which represented the courage of self-motivation and family support. He described Tony as a performer who believes that, quote, "When I sing, I hear the Lord." This was the moment when Tony feels his mission began. He sang, "Never Be the Same," and he was met with a standing ovation from the thousands of people who attended. Visibly moved, the Pope repeated, "Tony, Tony," then jumped from the stage and embraced Tony and gave him a kiss. The Pope said, "Tony, you are truly a courageous young man. You are giving hope to all of us. And my wish for you is to continue giving this hope to all people." This international broadcast launched Tony's career and changed his life forever. Now, more than 35 years later, Tony continues to inspire people around the world, having performed in all 50 states and more than 45 countries. He travels with his brother Jose, and together they share their message of hope, encouragement, and faith. Tony's message is presented with music and his personal life stories. He hopes that between his music and the listener's ear, that God intervenes, because Tony's committed to help bring people's hearts toward Jesus Christ. Knowing how important life is, he strongly believes in justice and living with dignity. Tony and Jose focus on young people by visiting elementary, junior high, and high schools, colleges, and universities. Through concerts, conferences, retreats, and school presentations, they emphasize the importance of self-esteem and that any kind of substance abuse is dangerous. They discuss how they deal with issues such as disability awareness, cultural awareness, and family support. They also address the topic of bullying and share their own stories of overcoming it with changes in attitude and discipline. Tony has recorded 6 albums and written his autobiography called A Gift of Hope, published by Harper and Row. He's appeared on countless TV shows, including The Today Show, Good Morning America, CBS This Morning, Late Night Show with Arsenio Hall. He's performed the national anthem at the World Series in 1989. He's also performed on 4 additional occasions for Pope St. John Paul II at the Vatican, in Poland, and at World Youth Day in 1993. Tony's the recipient of numerous awards and honors, including special commendations from President Reagan, the state of California, the city of Los Angeles, countless other civic and charitable organizations, as well as the first annual Inspirational Hero Award from the NFL Alumni Association at Super Bowl XXIII in Miami. Tony moved from California and now resides in Branson, Missouri, with his beautiful wife, Lynn, and two children, Marisa and Andres. Despite all the attention in these 35 years, Tony continues to resist the siren song of stardom, hoping only to develop his musical career and share his God-given gifts. Quote, "I don't feel like a celebrity," he says with a smile. "I just feel like me." We salute you, Tony Melendez. You're a real champion.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
Millions of Americans are losing their medical assistance or Medicaid coverage. If this affects you, Independence Blue Cross can help. You may be eligible to enroll in a health plan for as little as $0 a month. With Independence Blue Cross, you get the largest provider network in the area, including most Keystone First doctors and hospitals. We also offer free 24/7 telemedicine, coverage for hospital stays and prescriptions. See if you qualify for $0 health insurance and enroll today. Call Independence Blue Cross at 1-844-464-2583 or visit ibx.com/staycovered.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, and we're joined by our guest, Dr. Bruce Broad. Now, I have to stop and say I apologize to you, Bruce, because I said broad, because it rhymes with bod, but it's Broad. So, you know, you can travel incognito and change your name, but I'm going to leave that decision up to you, Dr. Bruce Broad. Thank you for being so sweet about that. So, Bruce, we're learning so much about tattoos and what people should be aware of. Maybe go to a parlor, watch the technique and hand washing, and do they take the equipment out of packaging and all those good things, and ask questions. How do you sterilize your equipment? So let's say a person's had a tattoo for a while, and now they want to remove it. I found it interesting when we chatted before that people of color, if they have a cut or a damage to their skin, might form a thickened scar called a keloid. And so we were chatting, I said, do tattoos cause keloids on people of color? And I guess the answer is not so often when the tattoo's applied, but laser therapy can lead to a keloid. So let's talk about laser removal and what it means if somebody wants to have a tattoo removed.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've come a long way. And believe it or not, when some people get tattoos, they actually reach a point in their life where they no longer want that tattoo. And there's many reasons that can occur, but the technology has really evolved over time. And in the old days before lasers, we used to use what's called dermabrasion. This sounds mm-hmm. really barbaric. We would use these like sanding wheels, literally, but they were sterile, and just basically grind down the layers of the skin over and over wow. until the tattoo was out. Obviously, it left horrific scars, you know, the Aww. Size of the tattoo. But lasers came into being. Lasers are a really powerful light source. And the way we use lasers in the skin is that different lasers will destroy things of different color in the skin. So we have lasers that treat, you know, red blood vessels on the face and patients with rosacea or unwanted brown spots or freckles on the hands or face. But we also have lasers that are different wavelengths of light that treat the different color inks in the skin. So there's lasers for blue, black ink. There's lasers for red ink, yellow ink, green ink. And the way they work is they push energy, this laser light, into the skin so fast and like in these short pulses that when the laser light, the energy is absorbed by the color in the ink tattoo and comes in like fast and furiously, it basically explodes the cell where the ink is sitting. The ink kind of sits in like immune cells in the skin, and it basically like just blows it up, and that ink disperses, and the body knows how to kind of clear that away. Tattoos are more reliable for dark inks, like blue-black ink, and they're a little less reliable on red, green, blues, and you never know how any one tattoo is going to respond, because we talked earlier that the the tattoos inks have different compositions, and so it's not really predictable. But it's evolved much better. It's riskier in patients, if you think about it, who have darker skin. It's harder to remove their tattoos because the pigment in their skin is dark, and that also absorbs that laser light. And so the laser in darker skin causes more damage to the intrinsic skin, and that's why some of those folks are risk for getting scars, or the laser can remove the tattoo, but their skin will never come back to its normal color. Somebody who has really, really light, fair skin is, you know, a better candidate for fewer complications. But it takes many treatments, high cost, you know, it's expensive to remove laser. And it can hurt. You know, we have
ways. That's what I was going to ask, if it hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. I mean, I usually anesthetize the skin when I do laser tattoo for my patients, either with the topical anesthetics work really well. Some patients are a little more less pain tolerant. We can use actually local anesthetics, like when you're removing a mole, numb the skin. But large areas, it's harder to do that. So we can do things to mitigate the pain. But it hurts, can take a number of treatments. There's some risks, and you know, it's expensive. Insurance doesn't cover things like that.
Well, and we think about some of the reasons why somebody might want to remove a tattoo. Maybe it was a love interest, and they're no longer dating, or whatever. Or you mentioned that if somebody is in a gang and they're pressured to get a tattoo, and life goes by, and they leave that part of their lives, and they want to erase it. It's not easy to get rid of that tattoo. And the other point that you made, because I think it would be helpful for people to hear about policy, the Food and Drug Administration regulates medications, et cetera, but ink products, even though, as you say, it's kind of a surgical procedure because we're breaching the skin and we're injecting with needles and such, but it's considered cosmetic, and that's why the Food and Drug Administration don't oversee the ink contents or the processes, et cetera. So is that a fair way to say it?
It is a fair way to say it. I mean, because the tattoo inks are viewed as cosmetics, the FDA sort of has some oversight in terms of their ability to receive. They have a database where they can receive adverse event reporting. And then they do have some ability to issue recalls. This is why it's so important to go to a good tattoo artist that sort of records all the inks and the lot numbers. But they really, like, the FDA doesn't have regulators, you know, they're just not empowered to go into the tattoo manufacturing plants and regulate that. They actually have, because of that study that we talked about earlier, where these unopened bottles had bacteria, the FDA issued what's called draft guidelines. So this is not the letter of the law, and it's still in draft form, but the guidelines at least are out there to help manufacturers who make these tattoos set themselves up for a safer environment, you know, protecting the vats in the factories from being contaminated and having good sterile procedure and practices. So, you know, that's a good thing. It's, you know, that's where at least we see government trying to do something to create a safer environment, but it's not a heavy-handed thing. Yeah. They're just guidelines.
You know, hopefully, as tattoos become more popular, it will be an issue that's raised, because even if we do have some guidelines or even laws, who's going to make sure who's going to oversee them? Who's going to make sure that somebody under 18 doesn't have a tattoo? Or how about just like a bartender should stop serving someone if they see they're intoxicated? You're not supposed to apply a tattoo if somebody's under the influence of alcohol or drugs. But how many times do you hear people jokingly say, yeah, well, I was really drunk and I went and did it? You know, who's enforcing this? Yeah, nobody. Yeah.
No, it's a very much of a patchwork out there. There's no federal law about tattoos at all, and the laws vary by states. Pennsylvania, where we are, is a state where tattooing is forbidden under 18 unless there's parental consent. But it's hard to enforce that. I mean, and then, you know, the parlors themselves. So there's different layers of regulation. There's the inks, there's the tattoo artists, and there's the tattoo parlors. And so depending on where you are, Philadelphia is actually pretty good. They have, you know, that's one of the jurisdictions in Pennsylvania where they're actually, it's not terrific, but there has to be some inspection of the tattoo parlors. They have to be registered. They have, so, you know, at least we know where they exist. There has to be some basic training for the tattoo artist on bloodborne pathogens. And, you know, they are, you know, potentially could be inspected. I'm not sure how often that happens. So, you know, that's good. But there's some jurisdictions where there really is no local law. A lot of these things are regulated by departments of health. You know, in various areas, they kind of oversee the tattoo parlors and require training and registration for the parlors and the artists. Mm-hmm.
So if a person considers getting a tattoo, how can a person maximize his or her safety?
Yeah, I think one, you know, it's good to, you know, reliable word of mouth is always good. But you want to go to a place that's registered, that's regulated. You want to make sure that the environment is clean. You want to make sure they wear gloves. You want to make sure they use disposable equipment. I think it's reasonable to ask about the training they've had in spread of disease processes. And, you know, things like masks and gloves are important because, you know, the artist, they're breaking the skin. If they have a cold sore, you know, that can get on the skin. If they have an infection on their hand, that can get on the skin. And you want to find out what they use to prep the skin before the procedure. You want to know what their post-care is as well. We've actually seen some complications with people being allergic to, like, weird things that are, you know, recommended to be used on the tattoo, healing ointments that have all sorts of allergenic chemicals in it. So I think it's really wise to inquire about the establishment and their processes start to finish, and then, you know, try to get word of mouth, make sure there's not been any sanctions on the tattoo parlor. And, you know, once you feel like you've done some due diligence and you're ready, you know, let her rip. It doesn't guarantee no complications. It just mitigates your risk of it.
So if somebody has a tattoo and they say, hey, Dr. Broad, I'm going to get another tattoo, what would you tell them in terms of care? What, obviously, soap and water. And we said earlier, you don't want to pick the scabs. You want to make sure your clothing doesn't stick. Any other common sense things that a person might not think of with their first tattoo?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, is, you know, choice of tattoo. So one of the issues that comes up in my patients, because I see a lot of people who have, you know, lots of moles and skin cancer, that's why they go to a dermatologist, is I try to remind them not to potentially get a tattoo that's going to camouflage their skin in such a way that now I can't detect whether they're developing early skin cancer. And I've had patients, and, you know, it's a little bit controversial. Does tattoo cause skin cancer? I don't think so. But people have lot, you know, tattoos are common and skin cancer is common. And I've seen both come together. And it's kind of sad when we have to kind of cut out an atypical mole or skin cancer where somebody has a tattoo. I mean, good, great to get rid of the cancer, but, you know, their tattoo is, you know, obviously forever altered. And you just don't want to miss skin cancer because of a misplacement of a tattoo. The other thing, too, that's a little funny is, you know, some of the tattoos have metals in them and some of the permanent makeups, like eyeliner, and people can get reactions in when they, like, so if it has metal and people need an MRI, that's an imaging,
that was my question.
Yeah, imaging procedure that's done to detect cancer or other serious things. That MRI kind of activates the metal in that tattoo, and it can be painful. And, like, if you think about it, like, wow, nobody wants to feel pain in an eye lid tattoo. That's a really sensitive area, or an eyebrow tattoo,
sure,
or, you know, other areas. Not all tattoos will do this, but the ones that have certain kind of magnetic metallic particles, typically darker tattoos, can do that as well. So I'd like to raise that awareness for people.
Yes. Yes, I'm glad you remembered to bring that up, because women are getting their eyebrows tattooed or they get the permanent under eyeliner. That skin is so sensitive, and you don't want, we're going to continue this after the break, but that has to be considered too, especially when people think, oh, it's just cosmetic and it's not, you know, a big tattoo on my arm or leg. Stay with us and we'll be back after the break.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
I'm always striving to live my healthiest life, so I need a health plan that has my back. With Independence Blue Cross, I get access to the largest network of doctors and hospitals in the region and free virtual doctor visits 24/7. Plus, with premiums as low as $0 per month, I can stay on top of my health and keep my budget in check. Independence has given me coverage I can count on, and they'll do the same for you. Learn more about your coverage options at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor, which we call Your Weekly Prescription. It gives us a chance to invite our guests to give a take-home message to our listeners. Bruce, what are your words of wisdom as we finish the show?
I think that it's really all about safety, and just keeping your eyes open, safety and transparency. So the decision one makes to get a tattoo, it's a very personal decision. I think I would just ask the listeners out there who are contemplating it just to keep in mind that it's a decision they're going to live with for a long period of time. So make sure it's something that's important to you. But do your due diligence. Make sure that you have the tattoo done in a place that's regulated, that follows proper procedure. Ask the right questions, and there's some guidance on some of the things to look for when considering getting a new tattoo. One of a good resource is on the American Academy of Dermatology. That's sort of the national, most dermatologists in the United States are members of the American Academy of Dermatology, and they have some great resources to help guide you when you're considering a tattoo or even after you get a tattoo. I think it's important when you do get a tattoo to care for it properly. When the tattoo is over, keep the skin clean and dry. Don't put lots of complicated, you know, all natural products that can cause reactions, like basic petrolatum-based products like Vaseline are good. I think another important thing that we didn't get to talk about is it's important to protect the tattoo from the sun. I'm biased. I'm a dermatologist. I'm like a broken record. I tell people all day, sun causes skin cancer and aging. It also fades tattoos. So it's another
interesting
consideration. Put it in a place where you're not going to get a lot of sun. And that goes for indoor tanning as well. Spray tans, of course, are fine. And, you know, I hope everybody out there who gets a tattoo has like a great experience and they don't run into complications. They don't have an infection. They don't have an allergic reaction. But sadly, these things happen even under the best of circumstances. And if you have a reaction, get to a medical professional. See, dermatologists, this is part of our training. So if somebody has a reaction, they're concerned about an infection, see a board certified dermatologist. They know at least how to begin the process of finding out what's wrong. Is it an allergy? Is it an infection? And can put together a plan to treat it as well. You know, remember not to get tattoos in areas where you have to have surveillance for moles that can turn into skin cancer as well. And, you know, if the day comes when you think, you know, I want to try to eliminate this tattoo, and there's so many reasons for that, You want to go to somebody who's really skilled and trained in doing laser tattoo removal, because there's some complications with that as well. And you want to deal with somebody who's going to give you the straight scoop and give you realistic expectations as well.
So somebody's experienced with laser removal of tattoos, because as you say, that could be quite complicated, different laser lengths of light depending on the color of the ink. So Dr. Bruce Broad, you are a member, you are a board member of the American Association of Dermatology. So if people want to take advantage of those resources that I'm sure list concerns or questions you should ask before you have a tattoo, care of your skin after a tattoo, they could visit the website of the AAD, American Academy of Dermatology. I said association. It's the American Academy of Dermatology. Yes. And if people wanted to be seen at Penn Dermatology, 215-316-5151. Yes. And and Penn Dermatology is the think tank of dermatology. What a treat to have you on the show. And last week, your chairman, Dr. George Katsourelis. I mean, the history of dermatology at Penn is just unmatchable. And aren't we so fortunate to have you in the city? Penn Dermatology, of course, at 34th and Spruce, or at Hospital University of Pennsylvania. But you also have offices at Penn at Radnor. And where else might people be able to schedule if they call 215-316-5151?
Yeah, we have two offices, well, three offices in Philadelphia, one at the Perlman Center, 34th and Spruce, Civic Center Boulevard. We have an office at Pennsylvania Hospital, an office at Presbyterian Medical Center. I'm speaking to you today from our Radnor office. We have an office in Bucks County, Yardley area, and we even crossed the river over into New Jersey. We have dermatologists in Cherry Hill and dermatologists in some other parts of South Jersey as well. So the mothership is 34th Street, but we're spread out, and you know, trying to get access to patients with skin disease and make folks healthier when it comes to their skin. That's what we're about.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Bruce, because we've learned so much really valuable, practical information. If you have issues after a tattoo, please see a dermatologist and know that the AAD, the American Academy of Dermatology, a great resource. Just type that in online and type in tattoos, search tattoos for what to look for before and how to take care of it after. Thank you so much, Bruce. It was a pleasure to have you today.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 o'clock here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to any of our shows again on audacy.com. That's AUDACY.com. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, and for support from Recovery Centers of America. If you'd like to partner in the show or advertise, send an email to info@yourradiodoctor.net. If you'd like us to discuss a topic, or if you want to tell us about a real champion in your family or community, shoot an email to info@yourradiodoctor.net. And remember, follow us and please like us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Next week, get your little rackets ready. Our topic is pickleball. Orthopedic surgeon Dr. Nick DeNubley will talk to us about the positives of being active and having fun with new friends, but he'll also help us decrease risk of injury with some really great tips. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love, and always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.